Welcome to Night Sky Tourist, a place to learn the night sky, have fun with its ancient stories, meet astronomers and dark sky advocates, and fall in love with the dark. I'm Vicki Dirksen, your host and author of the website and blog, nightskytourist.com. If you've never visited the website, I invite you to stop by after the podcast. Check out some of the great blog articles, browse through the resource page, and sign up for the newsletters. The newsletters have great content that is exclusive for subscribers. Are you ready for an adventure under the night sky? Let's jump right in. I love the memes that reference my generation being forced to go outside and to not come back into the house until the streetlights come on. But the neighborhood I grew up in didn't have any streetlights. The entire neighborhood had been fruit orchards, and many of the orchardists who lived there decades before I was born were from Finland. No one had fenced yards, and we just free roamed all over the neighborhood, and we tromped across other people's yards to get where we were going. The man who lived across the street from us grew a huge, beautiful garden every year. He was from Finland, and his name was Toivo Takala. He spent hours working in his garden, and then he'd guzzle some vodka in the afternoon and sprawl out in the shade in his front yard to take a nap. I remember him as being a nice neighbor, but kind of gruff sometimes, especially when he was really sure that my brother had been throwing rocks into his yard. And once in his vodka-induced afternoon state, he held a bottle of the drink out to my dad. And my dad says, "Oh, no thanks, Takala, I don't drink." To which Takala raised the bottle into the air and he said, "Well then, freeze it and eat it." And of course, I thought it was funny, but I didn't realize until adulthood that you can't freeze vodka. But I remember spending hours and hours and hours of my childhood outside. And even then, my mom often let us stay out until we felt like coming in at night. In the summer evenings, the neighborhood kids would get together at our house, and we played this game where we had to throw a racquetball over the top of our house to whichever kids were on the other side of the house. I don't really remember the game, but that simple play entertained us under the summer night sky for hours. Sometimes on the weekends, my dad would tell us kids to go grab all the couch cushions, blankets, and pillows, and we would go and sleep on the grass in our unfenced backyard. I even have two memories of going camping, with quotation marks around that word, camping. My parents loved to go for a drive in the country on the weekends, and a couple of times they brought the sleeping bags and pillows along, and we just threw them out on the ground and we slept in the wide open. One of those times when I was a teenager and I wasn't really digging the experience at all, I remember being mad at my parents because they slept in the middle with my brothers and I on the edge of our little family huddle. And I just remember thinking how irresponsible it was to let your kids get eaten by a wild animal in the night first. But in all of those experiences, there was the magic of feeling one with nature, of hearing the sounds of the owls and the distant coyotes, and also the little footsteps that you heard sneaking by from time to time in the dark. And of course, there was always the night sky. Northern Idaho had exquisite night skies. I wish, though, that I could go back in time for a moment and sit down with my neighbor, Toivo Takala, and learn from him about his Finnish culture. Because one thing that dominates in Finland and all of the Scandinavian countries is a concept of open-air living, of copious amounts of time outdoors in all seasons and in most weather. And in my adulthood, I've become fascinated with that aspect of Scandinavian life. And I feel there's so much that we could learn from that mindset. So I'm really excited to have a guest on this episode who is Scandinavian from Sweden. And I have two of her books sitting on my bookshelf, and sometimes I walk past them and I feel like hugging them because their messages are so precious to me. Linda Åkesson McGurk is the author of two books. The first is There's no such thing as bad weather. A Scandinavian mom's secrets for raising healthy, resilient, and confident kids. And the second book is The Open Air Life. Discover the Nordic art of friluftsliv and embrace nature every day. I lead many stargazing experiences every month, and one of the things that strikes me is how little time people in general spend outside, especially at night. The nighttime is like this foreign world to most people. And if any time is spent outside at night, it's mostly under the glare of artificial lights, or worse, with their eyes fixated on their screens. Chatting with Linda, in a way, solved my inability to travel back in time to learn from Takala. Linda is a Swedish-American writer who passionately advocates for the Nordic outdoor tradition called friluftsliv. She's written two books, which I already mentioned, and she runs the blog Rain or Shine Mama, where she shares tips and inspiration for outdoor play every day, regardless of the weather. And I don't think these tips are for kids alone. They're also for the forgotten child inside of all of us who still needs free time outside every week. Her work has been featured in The Wall Street Journal, Time Magazine, The New York Times, The New York Post, Huffington Post, and Psychology Today, and more. Please join me in welcoming to the podcast, Linda Åkesson McGurk. Linda, thank you so much for joining us on the Night Sky Tours podcast from Sweden and talking to us about a subject that's really been growing in my mind. So welcome.
Thank you so much for having me, Vicky. I'm happy to be here.
So what is the spark that really got your interest going in writing about this Scandinavian way of living so much in the outdoors? It's such a big part of the Scandinavian life as far as like what we read here in the United States. What sparked it?
So I was born and raised in Sweden, and then I moved to the US when I was in my 20s. And that's also where I had my two daughters. And I think the spark really was noticing the contrast between the cultures and how, you know, we lived in Indiana at the time. And I noticed, especially in the wintertime, there was like this hibernation just set in where nobody would really go outside. And if you did, you were considered almost crazy. So I would take my daughters out and, you know, regardless of the weather. And I had some pretty interesting reactions where people thought I didn't have a car, and that's why I was walking, you know, with them in the stroller in the wintertime. And they, yeah, like felt sorry for me. And there are all sorts of, you know, and I also had people telling me that it was dangerous to have my kids outside, that it was too cold for them. And I had others telling me I was brave for doing it. And to me, it wasn't strange at all, because that's how I grew up in Sweden, you know, playing outside all the time. And the difference was very noticeable, like in school and preschool as well, where kids had very little recess. And I just felt like, you know, I felt like something sort of had been lost, because I also know that outdoor play used to be a greater part of children's lives here in the US, because so many older Americans had told me that. And even the teachers at the school where my daughters went, you know, said that too. And I just felt like, you know, maybe I felt like I had a story to tell with my background from Sweden. And I wanted to tell that story and share it, because I felt like there's no way I can be the only parent here thinking that kids should be outside playing more. So that's when I came to think of Sweden and my upbringing with friluftsliv, which is open air life, which is this philosophy and tradition that revolves around being outside. So So that's how my first book, There's No Such Thing as Bad Weather, came about. And then The Open Air Life, which is my second book, came a few years after that.
Yeah, so I read your first book and I loved it. And I did struggle with a little part of it just because I live in the opposite extreme. I live in the desert. So in the summertime, I mean, we get temperatures, upwards to 115, 118 Fahrenheit. And you just melt, you scorch your brain out. It's painful. Oh, and you can only take off so many clothes.
I know, and that I know that's those temperatures are pretty miserable. And Indiana summers got pretty hot too. Not that extreme, but of course, with me coming from a cold weather background, that's where my perspective was, and that's why in my second book I address that a little more too, because of course there are tips too for dealing with hot temperatures, and one of them of course being that go outside during the cooler hours of the day, which is of course at night. So that's an area where I'm sure you're well versed in, so
It's funny because before we started recording, we were talking about the time change for daylight savings time because that just happened. And in Arizona, we don't observe that. And I grew up in northern Idaho. So when I moved to Arizona, it was the middle of summer. And so instantly the heat made me go, what have I done? And then it was weird because it would be 8:30, 9 o'clock at night, and it would be completely dark outside in the middle of the summer. And I was used to, 10:30 or so, maybe later before it got fully dark. So that was weird for me. But I'll tell you, it only took me a week to realize, oh, I like it when it gets dark earlier.
The sun is down, it's cooler. So definitely. And here it's we have the here it's the it's pretty extreme, the difference between summer and winter in terms of the available light. So we have in the wintertime, it gets dark here around 3:30, 4 o'clock. So we are very apt at dealing with the dark here too. Just not Yeah, I'd say, we've just made a virtue out of necessity. You just head out for your daily walk regardless, because that's the only time you have. Like when you get back from work, it's dark. When you head to work, it's dark. So you can just either embrace it or not. And I prefer to embrace it, because this is where I live, and life would get pretty miserable if I didn't embrace
Right.
it,
It's interesting to think about how, because you're so much farther north than most of us, that in the summertime, you probably can't even really stargaze at all because
No,
there's
you
no dark
can't.
sky.
It's too well for a couple hours in the in the dead of the night, you can see stars, but it doesn't get very dark in the summertime. And far up north, it doesn't get dark at all. The sun doesn't set at all in the summertime. And conversely, in the winter, you have polar nights where the sun doesn't rise above the horizon. But it's interesting, everybody thinks that it's pitch black there, but it's not. You still have light. It's just a different kind of light, and it's very beautiful light. I mean, I haven't experienced it in the far north, not the winter in the winter time, only the summertime. But what I've seen is, there's this beautiful like blue light in the winter time, and also of course the northern lights, which are beautiful, just breathtaking. And you get a lot of that up north. So I think that probably compensates for the lack of sun in the wintertime, at least a little bit.
I wonder, and this is interesting to ask you because you have lived both in Sweden and in the United States. In my mind, I imagine that in America, we have a lot of people who love to go outside and hike, mountain bike, kayak, go camping, go horseback riding. And Yeah, I get this idea that it's still different in Sweden. Like the interaction and the engagement outdoors seems to be different in Sweden. So, what makes your outdoor time different than the way most of us in America treat it?
I think, the main difference is that in Sweden, friluftsliv is more than a set of activities. I mean, it can definitely involve all those things that you mentioned, like kayaking and hiking and bike riding and horseback riding and all that. But it's not the main, that's not the main idea behind it. The main idea is to connect with nature and like form a relationship with nature and just sort of realize that we are one with nature, and very much about trying to connect with nature in your everyday life. So it doesn't have to be a grand adventure. I mean, it can be. It's great that if you can go high, go climb a mountain, that's fantastic. But I think 80% of the friluftsliv here is just going for a walk in the neighborhood. And of course, that doesn't get a whole lot of Instagram tags, but it does a lot for people's physical and mental well-being because you can do it on a regular basis. It's something that you can do every day. Most people it's free and it's something that you can easily do in your without needing too much gear or too much money. It's simple, so it's accessible, and that's very that's key to the whole friluftsliv idea, I think. So I think friluftsliv, it's really like a cultural rhythm almost, and it's sort of passed down from one generation to the next, and it's popular across the board. It's not just like a small subset of the population that does like goes on these extreme adventures, but it's like just something everybody, more or less, I mean, I'm generalizing here, but it's something that most people really do, which is not the case in the US. And I mean, there's statistics to support that too. And another thing about friluftsliv is that it's generally non-competitive, or actually that's one of the key tenant. And it's non-motorized as well, so it's all about getting. I mean, even if you drive somewhere to go for a hike, like the friluftsliv part doesn't really start until you're walking or paddling or swimming and getting around without any motors involved. So.
I think it's easy for us to just think about spending time in the outdoors as being something we do during the daylight hours. But obviously, stargazing, you can only do it at night. Unless you live in Sweden in the winter, you could do it during the day.
Yeah.
It's something that you do during night, and it takes a different kind of effort than what we do if we go out for a picnic at the park during the day, or take a walk around the neighborhood during the day. Going out at night to stargaze or just connect with nature at nighttime is different because it is colder, it is darker. It's easy to get spooked by unfamiliar sounds because we can't see what's making those sounds. I was leading a stargazing hike recently and got spooked because something moved in a bush. It was probably like
Yeah.
a little kangaroo rat or something. It was nothing, and I'm like, ah! But how would you encourage people around this idea of taking these outdoor experiences and putting effort into doing them at nighttime?
And let me begin by saying I mean, I totally understand that people might feel uncomfortable outdoors at night. I watched a lot of scary movies as a child, and which scarred me for a long time, where I would not feel, safe in the dark. But I think it's something that you can overcome. And I think stargazing is a wonderful way of doing that. So I think, I think a lot of us have those sort of fears, but I think we have to recognize that they're not really rational, and so try to look at them from like a more like an intellectual point of view, where we think about, the dangers that are outside, and whether, is it really rational to be more scared just because you can't see what's out there? I think the more you actually expose yourself to it, it's like with any other fear, I think the cure is really to expose yourself to it. And I think if you can bring somebody with you initially, I think that helps. Bringing company, I think, is, safety by the numbers is just an easy way. And also just make sure that you do what makes you comfortable. So yeah, it is cooler at night, so make sure to dress for the lower temperatures. Wear a headlamp to so you can see where you're going. But then I also, want to challenge people to, once you're out there, take a moment and pick a spot that you like, and just sit for a while. Bring a sitting pad and turn the light off and just sit for a while and listen to the sounds of nature. If you're in a green space, and you might be surprised at what you hear. And I mean, I think you the more you do that, you sort of you'll get to know the creatures that are out there and start to feel more at home. I mean, outside is where we have evolved for millennia, so it really is our home. Then, of course, we've also, there's a reason why we get spooked by noise, because I mean, that's also a signal that it could be a danger. I mean, I think that's very deep in our DNA as well. But today, for better or worse, there's not, there aren't any tigers, at least not where I live, that will come out of nowhere to attack you. So I think, just having, if you meditate, that's an opportunity. You can do that outside, at night. Like I said, just make sure to dress warmly, and dress in layers so that you can take layers off when you're walking, because then you heat up. If you really want to challenge yourself, maybe spend the night outside by yourself. That's something that I did, because I wanted to overcome this fear that I had for years, and I knew that the only way of doing it was to go out there. And I did a camp out in December. It was a couple of years ago now, but and it was I was a I thought I was going to be scared, but actually, once I was out there by myself, I felt completely calm, and it was quite amazing, actually. So I can highly recommend it.
That's awesome. I wonder if part of the calm came because you probably planned really well for what you were doing.
Well, actually, I didn't. I was hoping to get somebody to join me, and I was doing this challenge with a friend where we were going to sleep outside. We were going to sleep outside at least once every month for an entire year. But it was Christmas time and things were busy, and then my kids were gone, so they couldn't come with me. My husband was busy with something else, and all of a sudden it was like December 29th or something, and I realized that if I don't get out now, I'm gonna lose this challenge. So I just
Oh
packed up what I had, and I started close to home, because I figured if I wasn't too far away, I would feel safer. So I hiked, and actually I hiked just I just went for a walk where I usually walk during the day, so the area was very familiar to me. And I think that's a good tip too. If you're not too sure, start in an area that's familiar to you, because then I think you're more likely to feel secure. So I just brought my camping stuff and just pitched my tent, and yeah, made a little fire, and it was cooked some food, and it was all very cozy.
I think that's a great idea of starting close to home and somewhere where you're really familiar with and you're comfortable already. Because I think that, like with stargazing specifically, people should start in their backyard. I think that they should be very aware of what the sky looks like where they live, because maybe they live in a very urban area and you might only see the moon and a handful of stars. But
Yeah.
for a lot of people, they've never even paid attention to the fact that that's all they can see, because we don't
Yes.
take the time, first of all, to go outside at night, and second of all, to look up. And light
Yeah.
pollution is such a huge problem for that. And so, yeah, I think starting in your own yard where you're comfortable, you're familiar, and seeing what the night sky looks like from there, and then expand outward, go
Yeah.
farther and farther from home, because I think people will be really shocked at how much the night sky changes
Yeah.
the farther they get away from home. My husband and I did this recently. I lead stargazing experiences. I've been doing it for years. I'm outside at night a lot, usually with a lot of other people. My husband and I went, oh gosh, I think it's only 8 miles out of town from where we live.
Yeah.
It's a regional park. It's out in the desert. It's just plain desert. And
Yeah.
we went out and rode our mountain bikes right before it got dark. And then we sat in chairs watching it get dark outside. And it's funny because, well, first of all, the skies were a lot darker 8 miles away from my house. And I live
Yeah.
in an international dark sky community. So that was amazing to have that experience. But then you talked earlier about taking time, sitting out there and listening. What does it sound like out here? What's happening out here? And it's an interesting thing to watch the sky go from light to dark and listen to what all the wildlife is doing during
Yeah.
that time. And so I was so ready out in the middle of the desert to listen to the coyotes and the crickets and stuff like that. It was so silent that
Yeah,
all I could hear
good.
was my ears ringing. That was an interesting experience too, to not
Yeah.
hear anything. So yeah,
Right.
I love all of these ideas.
Yeah, you mentioned light pollution, and yeah, if you live in a city, that can be a real problem. Like you have to I think yeah, but sometimes you might not need to travel too far to actually see a huge improvement. I'm fortunate to live in the countryside where on a clear night we can do some great stargazing. Unfortunately, I'm pretty bad at the constellations. Like I know the most, famous ones, like the Big Dipper and some others, but that's something that I've been wanting to do actually is learn more. And I know there are some apps for it. It's something that we enjoy doing as a family too. My kids like watching the stars too. And it's something that we did when they were little, is that we would sleep outside on our patio, and we would so we wouldn't have I mean we would actually fall asleep just watching the stars. And it was so simple. We just brought out some blankets and sleeping pads, and we fell asleep just watching the stars. It's quite amazing. And like I said, it's so easy, at least if you live in a place where you can see the stars well. So.
That's what we did when I was a kid, growing up in Northern Idaho. And my dad would work 2 weeks of days, 2 weeks of nights. And so like his schedule was always messy, and didn't have a whole lot of money. And so I can remember sometimes on the weekends, my dad's like, grab some couch cushions, we're gonna go sleep outside. No tent, just out on the ground. And that's how, as a little kid, I learned how to identify satellites in the night sky.
Oh,
I was laying
yeah.
there watching all this stuff, and my dad's like, see that one that's moving and not blinking? That's a satellite. But you mentioned how, even though you have that kind of access, you don't know the stars very well. I didn't either. I grew up right
Yeah.
see the Milky Way in the summertime, and the only thing I could find in the night sky was the moon and the Big Dipper. That was it. It wasn't until after I moved to Phoenix and lost my night skies, and then to where I am now and got some of it back, that I was like, oh, I want to learn this. And so you mentioned stargazing apps, and I think it's an amazing way to learn the night sky, see things that are interesting to you, figure them out. I do have a couple tips about it. One is turning the screen brightness down all the way on your phone before you go, and then put it in that night mode so it gives the screen kind of that reddish color. And that helps protect the night vision. So you go from your phone to looking back up at the stars, you haven't blown out your night vision.
Oh yeah, that's a good tip. And that probably works for photographing the northern lights too.
Sure,
We
yeah.
constantly had that issue. We actually had the northern lights here where I live last year, and we would actually walk out with no like where like we had no headlamps or anything, and we would walk for a while to a point where we could see them well. And we were just stumbling through the woods because we couldn't see anything, but we didn't want to ruin our night
Yeah.
vision. But then, of course, the moment you bring your phone up, then it's like it lights up, and it's like, oh no, we ruined it all.
Yeah. So that's why I always tell people, just prep your phone that way. And then also, if you need to go out, like you're saying, at night, and you want to preserve the night vision, just take a red flashlight that helps. I mean, don't shine in anyone's eyes. That still isn't great, but it does really help to protect your eyes from shifting back to that bright light. And then you're
Oh
like,
yeah.
anything.
That's a good tip. I've never even considered
Yeah.
having one of those. I'll have to look that up.
Because even headlamps, you can get headlamps that, can click through different brightnesses. And then there's a red feature as well. Those are really cool. Don't look anybody else in the face, because then you ruin their eye, even with red. So, I think sometimes that the challenge when it comes to stargazing and learning the constellations, though, is that we tend to have really short attention spans. If we're out hiking or kayaking, it's like a whole body activity. You can't really do anything else. You're hiking, you're, rowing the boat or whatever. And stargazing is different because it requires us to get still, to just sit, to look, to take in. And I feel like we've lost enough attention span to really enjoy sitting out in the dark. So I'm wondering if you have any tips for us about those moments when it is quiet and it is still. How can we take that in and really appreciate it instead of feeling like we need to reach for our phone or go back inside,
I know. I was gonna say, I think we're wired to be productive, but I don't think that's true either. I think our society today really is very competitive culture. So we are constantly feeling the pressure, I think, to be achieving something. And that's another thing about Friluftsliv is that it doesn't come with that pressure. It's very much about just being outside just for the joy of being outside. It doesn't really require you to plan a bunch of activities or to be active. You can actually just go outside and enjoy nature. It gives you permission to just be in the moment, which is another thing that I really like about Friluftsliv. And I think in a stargazing context, I mean, if you have a hard time winding down, I mentioned meditation before, and maybe that, combining that, like a short meditation with being outside at night and watching the stars, would be a good way to ease into it, to still the mind, to just bring a pad and sit on and do that. Another thing, if you prefer being with people or doing something more social, I mean, you could also combining it with like a little campfire and sit around that, while, watching the stars too. And then you have company and you can kind of do it as a social thing together. So you're doing something, you're making a fire, but you're also, you can also turn your attention toward the night sky. I think the fire has sort of a calming effect on us as well. I really like campfires.
So that idea of campfires, though, takes me to another question that I have for you. Because in your book, The Open Air Life, you talk about forming an outside cooking group. And I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds really fun. And I don't know if you've ever seen these guys on Instagram called Men with a Pot. Have you ever seen them? If not,
No,
you have to look on the internet.
but
It's a couple of guys from Poland, and they do
oh
these
yeah.
videos of cooking outside in nature, and it is exquisite.
Interesting. I have to check that out.
Yeah, oh, so fascinating. Yeah, Men with a Pot, check it out. But anyway, I got
Yes.
to thinking about this idea of cooking outside and how just looking at these guys' Instagram page, it really inspires me. But I also see that as being something that's really compatible about spending time outside under the stars, the campfire and the cooking. And so I'm curious if you have any ideas that pop in your head about this idea of cooking outside under the stars.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, all sorts of ideas pop into my head, like a full moon cooking club, for example, to
Oh, yes.
gather when there's a full moon to, I don't know, make some traditional meal or yeah, something like that. Cooking and stargazing, I mean, something that could bring people together. I think it could be fun. You can learn about the constellations together. I think it would be fun for families, especially, bringing the kids and, getting everybody together. And also just a way yeah, like for gen for to a way to hang out, across the generations too. I guess I haven't run a cooking club myself, but it's a common way for us to spend time with our friends. And we make it very simple. You can make it as simple or as advanced that as you want to. If you want the focus to be on stargazing, well, just bring, hot dogs or soy dogs or whatever. That's easy. But if you want the focus to be more on the cooking, then maybe try some exotic dish and cook together. So I mean, I think there are all sorts of things you can do. I think the two go very well together.
I'm going to copyright your idea here of a full moon, full moon
Yeah.
cookout.
Yep, you heard it here first.
Awesome because the full moon is not a great time for stargazing, but it's such an amazing kind of magical
Yeah.
time to be outside. And I love
Right.
that idea.
Yeah, I didn't think of that. I suppose the moon is so bright at that time that it kind of outshines the stars a little bit.
But it makes it a good night to focus on the
Yeah. Right. But just the full moon, yeah, I feel like, it's just one of those times when we can feel especially drawn to the night sky. I think it's natural. I mean, it captures our attention in a way that an artificial light never will. And one thing that I do every now and then is go for a like a moonshine walk. We even have a word for that in Swedish, is a månskenspromenad. So that's when you walk at night without bringing your headlamp, and just follow the light of the or just use the light from the moon to find your way around.
When people
And
have never
that's
done
really
that
nice.
before, yeah, when people have never done that before and they go out for full moon walk or a hike for the first time, it's
Yeah.
fun to listen to their conversation because they can't quit talking about how surprised they are at how
Yeah.
bright
Yeah.
it is.
Yeah, I know. It is a lot brighter than you might think if you're not used to it.
Well, Linda, how
So
can people find you online and learn more about your work?
They can find me on my website, which is rainorshinemama.com, or they can sign up for newsletters and read my blog as well. And I'm also active on Instagram and Facebook under the handle Rain or Shine Mama. And my books are sold, well, pretty much anywhere where books are sold, I think, online, or check your local bookstore, I suppose, but online as well.
I will include all of those links in the show notes so that the listeners can go and just easily click on all of those and check out
Great.
all the places where they can find you and pick up both of your books. No Such
Thanks.
Thing as Bad Weather and The Open Air Life. They're both incredible books. They're fun to read too. It really just, every time I sat down with it, I just felt happy and I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, well, that was the idea, to inspire people and also give some good advice at the same time, but especially inspire people to just get out there and enjoy nature.
Well, thank you for joining us. I really appreciate you sharing with us and taking time with us.
Thank you for having me. I so enjoyed the opportunity to talk to you.
Have you subscribed to the Night Sky Tours newsletter yet? If you like this podcast, you won't want to miss my weekly newsletter. It's filled with things to see in the night sky for the month, notices about events and stargazing experiences that I'm hosting, occasional updates on the book I'm writing about night sky experiences on Highway 89, and so much more. When you subscribe, you'll get a free download of my 2024 Stargazing Guide. This beautiful month-by-month guide includes all of the most important things to see in the night sky throughout the year, when to see eclipses or the planets, along with some fun moon facts and lore and cultural constellation stories. I will never spam you with useless emails because, to be honest, spam is nasty. You can sign up today at nightskytourist.com. Join the Night Sky Tours family and find new inspiration for upping your game outside at night. Sign up today at nightskytourist.com. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Night Sky Tourist podcast. If you enjoy the Night Sky Tourist podcast, please show your support by subscribing to it and giving us 5 stars. Your ratings are really important to me, and they help more people discover the podcast. Be sure to visit nightskytourist.com for great articles and resources. And while you're there, sign up for the newsletter for exclusive content. Until next time, keep looking up.